Welcome to the Pivot Podcast, everyone. Today, Jeff and I are honored to welcome Mayor Mike Savage to the podcast. Mayor Savage was first elected mayor of the Halifax Regional Municipality in October of 2012 and was elected for a third consecutive term in 2020. Mayor Savage was born in Belfast, Northern Ireland, and came to Canada at age six. He grew up in Dartmouth, Nova Scotia, and graduated from Prince Andrew High School, as well as Dalhousie University here in Halifax, with his Bachelor of Arts in History. Welcome to the podcast, Your Worship.
Good morning. How you doing?
Fantastic. I wanted to start off by thanking you for being here, and also with a question about the moment that you realized you were destined to lead people. Because every time I hear you speak in public, you're just such a natural and genuine person, and hilarious, I might add. And I was just interested to know how you came to be who you are and the moment that you knew a career as a leader was your calling.
Well, thank you for the question. I don't know, because growing up, I was a pretty shy kid, and I never put myself out there very much. Come from a large family, seven kids, where we all, engaged in conversation, and our parents encouraged us to think critically and to argue and all that sort of stuff. But I was not an out there personality as a young guy. I've always been interested in politics, and I guess also in business. And I think people ask me now, how do you get involved in politics? And I don't have that much faith in people who plan a life in politics. I prefer people who do other things and find out that the things that they want to do in the community to make the world better require that leap into politics. So I don't know that there's a specific moment that I can recall that made me think this is something I want to do. For example, Marcel, you know my wife, Darlene. Darlene, I think, believes that I always wanted to go into politics. I didn't necessarily. And then when I got into politics, I didn't necessarily need to be elected. I was doing other things in politics, but I guess you just come to a point where you think, you know, I think I can do a better job than some of the other people who were elected. And I have faith in people who are in politics, but I just, you know, came across things in the community work I was doing that made me think, you know, I can do more from inside than outside.
No, that's fascinating. And I mean, under your watch, Halifax has seen a lot of change since you've become mayor. And I guess just hearing you respond to that last question, I was interested in understanding from your perspective, what do you feel since you've assumed office and your career in politics, what have been some of the most positive trends that you've seen in our region? And conversely, I'm also interested in understanding what you consider to be the most negative. Like what sorts of things have you seen that compelled you to come into office, and those trends, positive and negative?
Sure. I'll do the negative first, and I'll say this unequivocally. Social media is the most negative thing that I've seen. There's parts of it that are positive. I always say that Twitter is good because you get people's immediate unvarnished opinions. It's bad because you get people's immediate unvarnished opinions. As kids, we're always taught to think before we speak. And so much of what we see today in terms of communications violates that rule. And, years ago, if you wanted to see a public figure, or if you wanted to see a business leader or anybody, you had to go make an appointment to see her or him, or go to their house, or get them on the phone. And now you can, you know, sit in your parents' basement at the age of 35 in your sweatpants, and you can fire off shitty stuff at people all you want. And it shouldn't have any impact, but anybody who tells you that they love being criticized, I would argue, is not telling the truth. So social media has been, since I got into elected politics, the biggest negative development. What I like is my first big job was working for the Irving Company, running an oil company here in Halifax called Canards. And Mr. Irving, Arthur Irving, used to say, and this is something he got from his father, KC, the legend, he likes to see the wheels turn. So I like to see activity. I like to see things in motion. I think, you know, I also believe in selling. That's something else I learned in the Irving organization is, you know, you got to be able to sell yourself, sell your ideas. And I think we all sell. We all sell in many aspects of our life. It occurs to me, I do that as the mayor of Halifax. I said when I was elected, I wanted to be the chief marketing officer. I enjoy that part of the job, but I also have to sell myself. You know, every time I try to convince my kids to do something, there's a selling aspect in that. So the positives have been the growth of this city, but also that we have become a more diverse city, a more inclusive city. We're a city that understands better the importance of the First Nations in our world, and certainly here, the Mi'kmaq. And, you know, I just think I've always had this concept of politics and governance, which is that you make the pie bigger, you reward people for success, you let people be successful, you let people make money, and if you do it right, more people will benefit from that growth. And I'm a guy, I call myself a passionate progressive moderate. I believe in progress. I don't think you gain when you just penalize people who are successful, but I think you also want to encourage those who are left out of that success to have some opportunity. And I think we've done that in Halifax. So we've had growth, and I think it's been more positive than negative, but it certainly brings challenges.
You said, Mike, is that passionate, progressive, moderate, and then yes. We're talking about, social media and those things. This isn't exactly social media, but one of the things I had written down is when I was kind of preparing for this, I looked at your Wikipedia page, and a part of me is like thinking it's gonna be weird to have a Wikipedia page about yourself. Like do you ever check that thing and make sure that it's accurate?
I'm gonna do that right now.
Because one of the things when you said passionate, progressive, moderate, I'm trying to remember. I wanted to talk to you about how much you think your father's political life played into the fact that you ended up being a politician. But Wikipedia has a very specific quote in there, and saying that your father was viewed as a left-winged hippie. And I thought to myself, man, okay, well, I guess Mike just gave himself his own kind of political thing. And I'm thinking, how much of that Wikipedia article is accurate about his own life, and how much of that title for his father would be fair?
Well, my father was actually known. My father came over here to Canada in 67 from the UK. He was a crusading doctor back in the 70s. He had long hair. He smoked a pipe. He ran for public office under Pierre Trudeau. But he did interesting things, right? He taught sex education. He brought drug and alcohol addiction to people. He believed that there are a lot of people out there that need help who aren't getting taken care of. So as a mayor, some people he was called the hippie doctor. And then he was called, the commie mayor. When he became premier, there was people that called him a fascist. He was none of those things. He just believed that as people who were given the charge of governing, that we have to go where the solutions are and implement them wherever they may be. So, and I think, like a lot of other people right now, that so much of politics is isolated on the far right and on the far left, that there has to be room in the middle for sensible people to get together and say, we can do better than that. And, it doesn't have to be so polarized. And that's why it bothers me that some people think all the passion in politics is on the far left or the far right. In the U.S., you've got to be Bernie Sanders or AOC, or you've got to be Donald Trump. No, there's a whole bunch of people in the middle who believe in the power of capital, the positive power of markets and success in business, but also believe that we have to help people that need help. And that's where I am. And I think we need to find more people who believe in solutions. And as I say about mayors, because I think we're a different breed, we're idealistic, but we're not ideological. We're not tied to dogmas that just don't make sense. And so that's how I try to do my politics.
I think that political polarization you're referring to is hugely wrapped up in the same comment you made about social media. It's just we've got this idea that it's the Twitter feed is a representation of the population, but it almost certainly is not. It's a vocal minority on both sides having some kind of highly unproductive discussion or debate or argument or whatever the hell is going on over there, right? Yeah. And I find it so interesting. You said that's been the major change. You're coming back to your father. You presumably he wouldn't have had to have dealt with any of that, right? I think he passed away in the early 2000s, if I remember. So I would like to think things would have been totally different. You said you had to book a meeting with your MP or your mayor or something. Anyway, I really do think that's an amazing change.
Yeah, my father would not have done well with social media. I remember late in his life, after he had been diagnosed with cancer, but was in a remission. And he was doing some traveling to do some social innovation work in places like Russia and Africa. And they told him he would need to use his bank card to get money. My father was used to traveler's checks. And he had me take him up to the bank machine in Westfall and explained to him how a bank machine worked. And he couldn't believe, like, how do I know I'm getting my money? How do I know I'm not getting somebody else's money? So, yeah, the first thing you have to understand about Twitter, you have to understand this, is that Twitter is not a venue for resolving conflict. It is a venue for perpetuating it. That is what it does. Twitter is not interested in solutions. Twitter is interested in confrontation. And I use it, but I tell all politicians, just understand, you got to know how to use it. So I tweet out things I go to, things I see. I don't get into long arguments on it because there is no ability to win an argument, you know, in that number of characters. It's just, it's a change. And there's some good to it, but to me, there's more negative than positive, especially now with the guy that owns it.
Just to switch gears a little bit, it's no secret that we're in a desperate need of housing here in HRM. And I know building more housing in the city is a priority. I was kind of laughing to myself earlier because you spoke earlier about selling yourself and ideas during the conversation. I personally want to sell my kids on the idea of moving out at a reasonable age. And I know my wife does as well. We don't want them living with us until they're 40, but we also want them to afford rent. We want them to afford their first home, all these wonderful things. There's noise out there, as we all know. Most recently, I heard from the development community, they're expressing their views on the length of time it's taken to get things done in terms of projects. Others are saying that there have been genuine improvements. Do you believe we'll ever get back to a place where rent is, I don't know, $1,100 a month, or houses cost $300,000? What can HRM do to promote affordable housing?
Well, first thing is HRM is not in the business of affordable housing. The province is. They have a distinct mandate. But as a city, we've done a lot of things because it's not being taken up by the province. And I don't mean just this government. I mean any government. There's been no affordable housing built of any amount in Halifax since the 1990s. Right now, there are tens of thousands, in fact, hundreds of thousands of approved lots for development. The problem in the city is not that there's no lots for development. The center plan by itself made by right 37,000 units. The problem is that we have labor issues. We just had a meeting this morning with at the Halifax Partnership that Benita was at, with the Minister of Labor and Advanced Education. I'm not sure what the title is now. Jill Balser. Anyway, she's great. It's labor, right? People can't get the labor that they need, skilled or unskilled. And with inflation, you know, it's unlikely that rents are going to go down. The price of housing has gone down in Halifax, as it has in other places. But rental prices are probably at a place which is a new normal. And if you're going to have inflation and wage growth at 5%, 6%, 7%, 8%, you're not going to see rental prices coming down. I think we can build more. And Halifax, as you probably know, is a rental market. Of all the major cities in Canada, we have the least percentage of condo versus apartment. You know, the big developers here, the Southwest Properties and the Lowens, Ferris, Ramia, are rental builders. They build rental properties and they build good rental properties. And so we need to build more sort of market and below market affordable units. But that's, you know, supply is not going to reduce the amount of people who are homeless right now. And that's, you know, housing is a problem. Supply is an issue, but people who are absolutely homeless and living in tents is a huge issue on my mind and on the minds of many others. And, you know, the provincial government simply has to do more to assist in that. On the supply, yeah, we can all take it. There isn't a city in the country where the development community would say, you know, everything is great, but we have approved a ton of units in this city over the last couple of years. The center plan has been called the largest single upsizing in Canadian history. I don't know if that's true or not, but it might well be when you look at how many units it made as of right developable. And not everybody loves that, but, you know, we've been working on this for some years.
Yeah. And I mean, your point on sourcing skilled labor is noted. I mean, I sometimes think about the population of maybe not just Halifax, but Nova Scotia as a whole. We have a lot of people pretty close to retirement. And, you know, when I look at or think about things like skilled trades. I mean, we do have underrepresentation when it comes to women, Indigenous folks, new migrants. Do you really feel we're doing enough in this area in terms of skilled labor? What are your thoughts?
Well, I brought a motion to council last week for the partnership to work with us and with others to work with the province, of course, because the province have taken some action to skill up the workforce, which I think is really important. You know, I was in Spain in September. We visited a city. And it's interesting that that's a city that's grown but doesn't want to grow anymore. And we're a city that's growing and wants to continue to grow. And the people we met with at the city, including the mayor, believe that there are cities like that that could send people here for a couple of years, skilled workers, who would learn while they're here, but help us with our shortage of skilled workers. And many of them might go back to this city in Spain. But in the meantime, it gives us, you know, a supply of skilled workers. There are a lot of people around the world who are looking for a safe place to come and live. And if we can align, you know, our immigration track with our economic development track, I think there's a potential, you know, to bring people here. And we need skilled workers. We also need unskilled workers. We don't have enough people driving transit. We don't have enough people collecting solid waste. And there are people who can, who are prepared to come to Halifax and do those jobs and could do okay here. And they can find, you know, housing. You know, we have people here from all over the world, from Bhutan and from Philippines and lots of places who are working really hard and adding a lot to the community. And so I think we need skilled workers for sure. We also need unskilled, and we have to be creative. And you know, there are people around the world who would love to come here and do that work. And we have to find a way to facilitate that, because it's not taking jobs away from people who are already here.
Yeah. And I mean, Halifax has such a history of, you know, certainly the Lebanese community and the Greek community of building the city to where it is today. And you're very right. I mean, there's no doubt lots of people would love to live here, and it'd be a privilege. I guess I'm wondering about how to balance that with they need to stay healthy. They need to be educated. They need their housing needs met to come full circle in that conversation. How do you see all that kind of squaring?
Well, you know, the city of Halifax has grown by, since 2016, we were 416,000. We're now 470,000. You know, we've grown by 55,000 people. Most of those people have found a place to live. I mean, we've had record development. I mean, I can't look out my window without seeing cranes in the sky. There's a ton of stuff that's being built. And, you know, we do need more, but, you know, we haven't added to the homeless population by 55,000, right? There's, you know, the market is creative in finding ways to, you know, to do things. And as I indicated, with the center plan, just one single piece of planning, it enabled 37,000 units, plus another 12,000 in special nodes, one of which is the Micmac Mall area, where there can be thousands of people. And we will facilitate those developments. But we also want to make sure that we drive affordability through the process that allows people. So I have two kids. I have a daughter works at RBC who's living in Halifax. I have a son who's working at the shipyard, who's graduated, who's moving out with a buddy of his January 1st. He's going to live in, you know, in Dartmouth. It's a challenge for us and our kids. You know, the good thing is my kids want to live here, you know, because they didn't always. They always thought after graduation they go to Toronto or Vancouver. Now they want to live in Halifax because we built a city that young people want to live in. You know, so there's no challenges we can't address. It just needs to do it together. Orders of government, you know, putting their mind to it and putting their egos aside and working with, I argue we have the best development community in Canada. You know, I used to say that the civic bird of Halifax was the Lebanese crane, because you saw them all over the sky.
Yeah.
And, you know, we just have a lot of people here who can meet that challenge.
Yeah, no question. I haven't spoken to a lot of people lately, you know, anybody lately who maintains some kind of, you know, anti-immigration stance, but if you do, you're really not paying attention to what's going on around here. I do want to linger, because you came back on it, you know, find somewhere, someone place to live. The homelessness issue. This is really anecdotal. I think I'm seeing more of this just because, you know, there happens to be tents on the routes I'm taking. But I'm seeing more of it than I did in the past, regardless of, and, you know, and obviously it doesn't have to be said, but the living conditions in many of these situations are just horrendous. They're bad. And regardless of whose, let's say, jurisdiction this is, I'm wondering if you comment on your opinion on how we start to solve this issue, and maybe it's already in the works. Maybe I'm just not aware of it.
Yeah, it's a good question. So as I said before, we haven't built any amount of appreciable, affordable housing. Certainly haven't built a whole lot of shelters, you know, for 20 or 30 years. And all governments ignored that issue. All provincial governments ignored that issue. Now it's a crisis. And so the city stepped in last year, right? We bought 26 modular units on the Dartmouth side, 38 on the Halifax side. You know, this isn't the Ritz-Carlton, but these are good units that are plumbed in, that have heating, that have cooling, because we have people who are high acuity, high need, who have no place to go. We've also designated certain areas in the city where we will provide services to people. There are some people who simply don't want to be under a roof. That's just a fact.
Yeah.
And so what do? So rather than have them, living in random areas without any support, we're providing, you know, potable water and bathroom facilities, garbage pickup, basic services at a number of sites. And then we have people who live under those circumstances, who, when it gets extremely cold, they have to go inside. And so the province has opened up a couple of, working with us, has opened up a couple of shelters in the heart of the city. There's a new one opening up in Sackville. Okay. That says to people, you know, you can't freeze to death. We have sent buses around to homeless sites to pick people up before extreme weather to bring them to areas where they would be safer. I mean, if you really believe that all people are created equal, if you believe that we're all worthy of some dignity and self-respect, you cannot just leave people to live in tents and not provide service to them. Whether, you know, there it could be some of these people might have a history of violence, but nobody chooses to be homeless, and drug addiction and mental health issues are a huge component of it. So, you know, we can provide some area for folks to live, but they have to have that support around them that gives them a chance for a better life. And so there's some work being done on that by the province and by us as well. And, you know, cities like Fredericton and Charlottetown, you know, it's not just the big cities anymore, right? These cities all have these encampments in the city, and everybody's trying to figure out what's best for those individuals and also provide some sort of system-wide solutions.
Yeah, well, it sounds like we're on the right path there. And to move away from the negative side of things, it's kind of, you said your kids both want to live here, which is just great. I do want to take some time and talk about your kids. You know, you've grown up in an environment with, you know, a father as a politician. Now they have. I suspect that, and I will say, a lot of this comes back to the root of what I'm always, the comment I'm always making, which is, what the hell causes someone to want to be a politician and put themselves and their family through that? It's just, you know, there's so much good you can do, but so much negative that's going to come along with it. Do you think you'd want your kids to get into politics?
I wouldn't discourage them from it. I don't think either of them have a great interest in it. You know, I tell any young person that, you know, establish yourself in a career before you think about politics. I'm not a fan of people who graduate, go to work on Parliament Hill for somebody, and then maybe decide they're going to run. That's not my avenue. My avenue is get out there, be a good citizen, find out what you want to do. And if you want to go into politics, you know, you should do it. I've been lucky. I mean, I can walk the streets of this city and get very little in the way of criticism from people. You know, people know me as Mayor Mike. You know, they know I'm just a regular guy that's trying to do the best job. Because I'm not a liberal or a conservative or a New Democrat, not identified as that, I don't have automatic enemies in this community the way a premier would. And I like that, right? I like, you know, I don't need security. There's lots of people around that, you know, need security. I don't think I need security. You know, I think I think politics is an important thing to do. And as I said before, my father was 50 some years old before he became the mayor of Dartmouth and he became the premier. I'm more of a natural politician than he was. He was a social activist who strayed into public life, stayed there, enjoyed very much his time in office, but he was mayor for 7 years and he was premier for 4 years, or 4 years, I guess. And he had an impact. And I think more and more people are saying that the way that he did his politics was a positive way. It was a good way. He was highly principled. And I think that there's room for that. But I would never, you don't go into politics for the money unless you can't do much else. And you shouldn't go into politics expecting everybody's going to love you. So you should expect to do a good job, work hard. People will agree, some will disagree. That's just life.
You just reminded me of something cool that just kind of dawned on me is hearing your response there, Mike, is as a politician elected by a municipality, you are actually elected by your constituents, whereas the premier can't say that and the prime minister can't say that.
Yeah, I'm.
That's pretty awesome. You know,
more people directly vote for mayor than any right. other position in east of Quebec City. And so, particularly as mayor, you get elected. So I don't know how many votes I got in the last election, but probably, I don't know how many, 80,000 maybe or something like that.
Well, you won by a landslide, but yeah, a lot.
Yeah, but if you're going to be elected mayor, you get elected directly, right? So,
right.
Whoever the premier of the province is probably gets elected by 4,000 or 5,000 people in their constituency, and then they form a government. Whereas, as mayor, you get elected by the whole community, and you get elected without the party label, right? So, and there's good and bad in that, right? You can hide in your party. You can't hide when your name is Mike Savage and people have to vote for you. They have to vote for you or against you. And I think it's a good thing. I like it.
Mike, you are a Liberal MP, though, were you not?
Yeah.
Have you moved away from any, particular affiliation?
As mayor, you can't be an effective mayor and be a Liberal mayor or a Conservative mayor or a New Democrat mayor. You just can't. So I've been to NDP events before. I've been to Conservative events. I've been invited to the AGM of the Conservative Party a number of years ago and went quite happily, welcoming people to the city. That's my job as mayor. Those things that made me become a Liberal in federal politics still exist. So I'm a middle of the road guy that.
Yeah.
Believes in the power of private capital, but the need to support those who don't do so well. But, I didn't have a lawn sign on my lawn in the last provincial election. I don't endorse candidates. I work with whoever gets. I've worked with Stephen Harper, Peter McKay. I've worked with Daryl Dexter, Steve McNeil, and the current government as well, and Ian Rankin, and whoever is elected leader, it's my job to work with. And we do our work without the party label coming into it at the municipal level, certainly here in Halifax.
We just went through, I wonder if we should touch on COVID. We're normalizing here. It seems to be big time. Do you want to talk about any particular challenges? What's it like running a city through a global pandemic?
I'd rather not do it again. Here's my take on COVID. Like when it happened, people kind of pulled together and recognized that we had to do what we had to do, that we had to mask up, that we had to shut things down. We had to do all those things that were required to get through it. The length of it, I think, has gotten people to the point now where they're just totally fatigued with it.
Yeah.
And, that's a challenge. It worries me that people aren't coming back downtown to their offices. That people working from home has become normalized. And that's good and bad. It's it's good in the sense that, we had about 20 companies come to Halifax and set up here during COVID. And, many of them had never been to Halifax before, the key people. Because if you can work from anywhere, a lot of people wanted to work from Halifax. So that's a good thing. But I worry that the world has changed to the point that we're not going to be together as much. And as a guy that kind of lives off that connection with people, that's tough. Then there's the economics of how COVID impacted different governmental budgets. We did everything we could as a city to support efforts, making eliminating the fees on outdoor decks and things like that, trying to do little interesting pop-ups like we did down between the old Triangle and McKelvey's. The things that we could do, we don't have the fiscal capacity of particularly the federal government. But I don't know that we know all the effects of COVID yet, and I think some of them could well be that we just don't get together as much as we used to, and that makes me sad.
Yeah, you could be right there, but I think the human spirit is strong here. You know, when I'm going out and meeting with clients or otherwise, I have to say there's not a whole lot of COVID coming up anymore. Whether or not that's because, you know, we've all got our vaccines and we feel comfortable and we're going about, or whether it's fatigue or something or other. But, you know, 2 years ago, we would say, well, I don't know if we're ever going to shake hands again. And let me tell you, I've shook a lot of hands lately. So, you know, I am feeling quite a bit of that normalization. Have you haven't seen so much of it, or how do you feel about that?
I have. No, yeah. Absolutely. Look, you know, my life is affected by COVID in a very direct way, in that being mayor is a busy job and you're out a lot. And during COVID, I was home watching the Blue Jays a lot more than I ever expected. I was home on Saturdays. Now the schedule's back, right? So we're full up on Saturdays and Sundays. You know, there hasn't been a night this week that I've been home before 10 o'clock. You know, and I like that. But from an office point of view, I just worry that, you know, we have a lot of vacant space, and there's a lot of companies, and probably RBC included, where people are going to just continue to work from home because they can. And that's good for them. I don't like its impact on the local economy.
Yeah, I'm one of the weirdos that likes going into the office. So maybe I should round up the team here.
Mike, what is your favorite thing about the HRM? I mean, you've said a lot of great things during our discussion, but what's your absolute favorite?
Well, I'll give you the political answer and say the people, but I think that we're well positioned as a city, and I love being a mid-sized city that's growing, that our economic plan is called People, Planet, Prosperity. I love that. And I think it represents this community, which is a community that believes in helping each other out. So I think the greatest thing is, for me, is that I like the community. I like the combination of, you know, one of the best downtowns, a great waterfront. You know, I remember the head of the International Bridge Commissions came to Halifax a few years ago, and I went to welcome them, and the guy said, "Mr. Mayor, we just want you to know that we voted you guys the best waterfront in North America." And I said, "Oh, yeah." And he said, "And you have to understand, we were in San Francisco last year and Miami and a bunch of other places. So we have a great waterfront, but you can also be in a canoe in 20 minutes. And I think quality of life is a great thing, but there has to be jobs associated to it. And I think we're at a point in our history where we have that.
Mike, I have to ask this question. On a scale of 1 to 10, what do you think the likelihood is of Halifax getting a CFL franchise?
I would say 6 to 7. The CFL want to come here. We don't have a stadium, obviously, and you can't play in the parking lot of Micmac Mall. So that's our challenge. But I would also say that what you've seen with the Wanderers shows that anything is possible, and CFL want to be here. And, you know, people support sports here. They support the Thunderbirds, whose home opener is tomorrow night. They support the Mooseheads. They support the Wanderers. They support university hockey. We've got the NAIG games coming. We've just had the World Canoe Kayak. We've just had the World Sailing Championships. There's a lot of stuff going on here.
So we just need to build a stadium, is what you're saying.
Yeah. Are you a CFL fan?
I am, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm not a big CFL fan, to be honest with you.
Yeah, neither am I.
I'm an NFL fan. I love the NFL, but I think that the CFL could be a very good thing for this city. And I know that to even out the CFL, to have 5 teams in the West and 5 in the East, would be a great thing. And I think if we had it, it would be successful.
Mike, you know, we've had you for a little while now. I really appreciate you doing this. I'm wondering if we can end things there. Thank you so much for doing this. There was so much other stuff I'm sure we could talk about, but you know, if we keep doing this podcast long enough, we'll end up begging you to come back on.
All right. Anytime. My pleasure.
Thank you, Mayor Savage.
Thank you, guys.